Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
Each week, we'll be discussing the stories we're working on and which you can read more about in the City Press.
You wrote a very, very important piece this week. And it's about just how, you know, we as investors, and I'm including myself in this piece as an investor, how we want to always be winning in the market, how we want to time the market, how we want to invest when things are, you know, happy, when things are going well, when you're getting the good returns. And once you hit the not so good returns, we want to switch, we want to get out of the market because I don't want to lose money. And you wrote this piece to tell us why we shouldn't be human.
How being human makes you lose money, yes. So I mean, the piece was very much about, you know, why not to time the market. But what I've found is that I've been in the markets a long time. People may not know this, but I'm actually from stockbroking. That's where I kind of started. And we managed people's money, and I was on the trading desk. And I started to notice this real trend, and I always call it the buying signal, the selling signal. And that is when retail clients start piling in or piling out of something. And of course, it's always the opposite. You must do the opposite of whatever the retail client is doing. So a good example would be the dot-com bubble. So in the late 90s, everybody wanted to buy into the dot-com shares, and you know the internet was the new thing, tech shares were the new thing. And I distinctly remember the December before the whole thing collapsed, a client phoning me and saying, I've got my children's school fees for January. I want to put in the market and double it.
Oh my
exactly.
Word.
And I remember thinking, right.
I would never do that with my sons.
Yeah, but people get into this belief system that things will go up forever. And that was a definite signal that the market was getting too hot. And the next time I heard this was, I remember very clearly in 2011, gold. When I started, I was now writing as a financial journalist, and I was getting emails from readers saying, how do I buy gold and lots of it? And I thought, familiar. And I remember I did a column, and I think 2 months after that column about why this is a signal, the gold price fell, and is actually in dollar terms hasn't even come back to where it was at that time. And of course, so when we saw the Bitcoin thing starting, and people who didn't even know what a Bitcoin was, who didn't have a clue how this whole thing worked, who were investing in Bitcoin. In fact, they didn't even have a fixed deposit. They were non-investors. I thought, okay, this is another signal. And yeah, so this is exactly, and this is what people do, is they get really, really caught up in whatever cycle is happening. And this is almost what we saw at the end of last year. So what I started to find was that people, the markets have been done really not great over the last 3 years. And 2018 was a particularly bad year in terms of losses. I think it was over 8% loss that year. And suddenly I was getting everybody, I'm not investing in the markets anymore. I only want fixed income. You know, they love these bank accounts coming out at 10% per annum for if you invest for 5 years, and basically markets are terrible and they will never recover. And I think I sent out a tweet saying, wow, okay, this is a signal. And of course, everybody says, no, this time it's different. This time the markets will never recover because there's Trump and there's, you know, corruption and there's
ISCA. All sorts of things. Yeah.
Everyone has justifications for it, but I can assure you that every time an entire mass of people start deciding about a trend, you should be doing the opposite. And what have we seen the first 3 months of this year? The market is up 8.5%. So, and all those people, what we saw last year as well was a massive move away from equity-based funds into fixed interest funds. Fixed interest had massive inflows. So all of those people, that wasn't new money. That wasn't money that people had on their mattresses. This was generally selling out of the equity market and going into fixed income and just at the wrong time. And I think that's really, you know, what I was trying to get through into the article, is that we really suck at timing the market. So I don't know if you find that with your clients. I mean, do you get that kind of sort of sense that people say, oh, I'm too scared to go in now? I mean, and what do you say to them?
You know, Maya, I think maybe let's just take it a step back a little bit, because you mentioned retail investor And also we know that there's institutional investors. So can you explain to our audience what a retail investor is and an institutional investor is? Because those two drive the market.
Absolutely. And in fact, it's great that you're raising that point, because we're seeing the institutional investor driving the market right now. So it's a great question. So when I say retail investor, I mean you and me. So this is just the average person who's on the street who's now investing their retirement funds. They may be investing in their tax-free savings account, but they're investing. And often they are investing through an advisor. And this is, unfortunately, the advisors suffer as much from this bias as you and I do. They're generally not all advisors, but generally speaking, an advisor doesn't want to see their client lose money. So they can often get caught up in that emotional roller coaster. Whereas your big institutional investors tend to be your asset managers. These are professional investors. Now, I can assure you they also get it wrong. No one ever gets it right all the time. But they do work more with things like valuations and fundamentals. So they're not as emotional as we are. They will actually look at values. And what's very interesting is what we also started to hear in December and also early in January was the asset managers, the institutional investors coming out for the first time and saying, we see value in the South African market. For the first time, I think Old Mutual said, we're seeing value for the first time in 10 years, that we're seeing that the South African market has dropped enough and the share prices relative to their earnings are low enough now for us to consider putting money in. So that was also another very important signal. And, you know, as I said, institutional investors can get it wrong, but they, generally speaking, if they're talking from a fundamental perspective, you should be listening. You should be saying, okay, that's interesting. Let me pack my emotions away. If I can go into Zara, as an example, and they've got a 30% sale, that's better than going into Zara when, you know, at premium prices, right?
I think, Maya, that's exactly the point of this podcast, right? That a lot of the times, as investors, as retail investors, you know, when there's blood in the market, as many experts explain it, you know, when things are going south, when things, you know, there's no good returns and no one can find good returns, we want to run away from that. That's when we like, you know what, negative returns, it's a bloodbath, you know, you can't be here. But that's when there is value, isn't it?
Yes. And I mean, I'm going to say yes and no, because a market can also go into a bear market for quite a substantial period of time. And that is what we've seen. So people, so 2017, we had a relatively good market. But from 2015, if you looked at over the period, we would have actually been better off in cash. So people are saying, oh, look, and they start looking retrospectively. So these things can go on for a period of time. But what you've got to look at is saying, okay, where are the valuations sitting? So yes, the market is down. The market could be down 10% and it could still be expensive. So you also got to be careful about not jumping in just because the market's come off some. You've got to say, is the market now at a value that it's worth investing? So sometimes those, as I said, those valuations can go on for quite a period of time, that negative market. And that is I think where we've been and where we're coming from. And that has sort of got into the psyche of people saying, you know, this is probably a relatively long bear market.
Maya, for me, the question that I really want to ask, as an investor, as a normal investor, and the reason why I'm saying this, I was talking about tax-free savings on Metro FM just yesterday, right? And really, people just don't seem to grasp what happens in the market. You know, if a company's valuation is low, the share price is low. As a normal investor, how do you grasp all of these things? How do you say, you know what, I'm going to stick it through. I'm not going to time the market. But I know we always say, you know, don't look at your statements everyday type of thing. But how do you reconcile that as a normal investor sitting and you hear Maya and Mapole speaking about these things, which they are familiar to, right? And say, you know what, I'm just going to stick it out. I'm going to stick it out because over a long period of time, I know I will recover.
I think what's really important, and you've highlighting it, I mean, I think it's a really serious issue. People don't understand stock market investing. So they, and I often get people writing to me saying, what will give me the best interest? And it doesn't give you interest. It gives you capital growth, and it gives you dividends. So there's a lot of education we need to do around the stock markets. And I think that's part of the issue. But I mean, in a very simple form, you know, if you think about the stock market crash of 2007, what actually happened was, yes, there were events, things happened. The valuations of these companies fell because nobody was buying them because people were nervous. But what happened when you went to Pick and Pay and bought your groceries? Were other people in the shop with you?
You still went.
You still bought your airtime from Vodacom or MTN. You still went and banked with the banks. So day-to-day business continued. And you've got to look at that and say, well, hold on a second. Day-to-day business is still continuing. There's this crazy stuff going on out there because of, you know, subprime and America, and sometimes it's politics in South Africa. But what's actually happening on the ground? And imagine if this was your business. And when you buy shares in the stock market, if you buy an exchange-traded fund, for example, or a unit trust, you have exposure to maybe 20, 30 different shares, maybe even 50. What are those companies doing? They're just doing business. And what I always like to say is that you basically, the CEOs of all those businesses work for you, and every day they're going to work for you. So there's that element of understanding that that's actually what drives the valuation of a company, is going and it's day-to-day business. This whole stock market thing, you know, that can have another whole lot of short-term ups and downs. Obviously, the real problem is when there is something fundamentally wrong in the company you've invested in. And Steinhoff would be a classic example of that. It was a massive fraud, effectively, that was perpetrated. And those things do happen. But I think you've got to just think logically, you know, if I look around me, is business still continuing? And if it is, you know, forget listening to the news and to all of these headlines and all the rest. Because what is so interesting, and I talk about it in the article as well, is what happens when you try and time the market. So there is so much research that shows when you time the market, you make far less money. And I think one of the examples I used in there was actually, so Old Mutual has done some research that I used, and they worked out that over the, I think since June 1997 until December 2018, I think it was about 3,780 trading days. If you had missed, if you had stayed invested, you'd put your money in and you'd never touched it, you would have had an annual return per annum of 17%. Okay. Now, remember, this is 97. So we went through, I don't know if you know the history of the stock market, but there was the 98 emerging market crisis. We had 2001, 2002. We had another crisis in South Africa. Then we went through dot-com bubble. We've had a whole lot of blow-ups. Yes. You would have made 17% per annum. If you had just missed 10, just 10 out of those 3,000 odd days of the best days of trading, your return would have dropped 12.6%. And if you missed 40 trading days, 40 trading days, it fell to 6%. So you would have got pretty much what cash would have given you. So this idea that you can time the market, if you thought in October last year, oh, I'm worried, and you pulled your money out and you've missed January, February, March of this year, you've missed out on 8.5%. already in just 3 months. So, and you do not know when that's going to happen. It's impossible. No fund manager in the world knows when that's going to happen. So that's why we just say it is time in the market, not timing the market.
That is so important, Maya, because we always want to, you know, we reflect back most of the time, unfortunately. And we don't know, like you're saying, you don't know when those best trading days are going to happen. So it's just, stay in the market, stay the course. And I think that's why it's so important to know your objective, you know your goal, why you are investing.
And I think that's also important, Mapalo, is the time that you're investing for. So, you know, if you're only investing, and I think there was also some really, really interesting stats that I put into the article as well, which is around your potential to lose money. So what is the probability of actually a negative return?
I love that. I was talking to my husband on our trip, just the probability of you losing money. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, so we actually have a graph in City Press that shows us really nicely. But again, what this did is it was research that looked, and it went back over a long period, I think over 80 odd years. And they said over any period, any rolling 1 day, 1 week, 5 years, what was the probability of losing money if you were in the stock market? Mm-hmm. And on one, if you were only invested for 1 day, the probability is 45% of a loss. So you don't want to, that's pretty high risk, right? Over 1 week, it's like 43%. Okay, but over a year, if you only invested for a year, there's a 20% chance that you will have less money at the end of that year than you began with.
Over
5 years, there was 0%. So that is saying there is no period in the stock market where if you had put in 100,000 rand, 5 years later, you would have less than 100,000 rand. And that's what they talk about this risk mitigation for the longer time that you stay in the market. Because again, we talked about those short-term like chaos that can happen. You have no idea what's going to happen on 8th of May, right? We don't know, on election day. So, you know, if you've only got 1 day in the market, maybe not on election day, but it's... There's too many variables. But over 5 years, you know, the probability of you losing money basically goes to zero. So if you're looking to invest for your pension, and this is a lot of the long-term investing, you don't need to worry about market movements because you're investing for, you know, 15, 20, 30 years. And there it's literally, you know, goes down to no losses at all. And, you know, unless I suppose you could, and I think South Africans are panicking about Zimbabwe and where we're going with Eskom. But the reality is if you believe in the future of the country or globally, you know, markets are for the longer term. So I think if you are investing for less than 5 years, there is risk. If you're investing for longer than 5 years, your risk is pretty much negligible. And Mapula, the other thing that's really important to mention here is if you're investing monthly, like I do, you do, it's very seldom I have 100,000 to put in the stock market at any one time.
Maya.
Exactly. Your risk reduces even more because you're buying in ups and downs. So if the market's falling like last year, every single month you bought more shares or more units for the same amount of money. So that even, you know, you actually effectively are better off in a falling market because you're buying cheaper and cheaper every time. So I think if people can understand these concepts, it will help.
I think, Maya, you know, just having said that, for me, it's so important that we do maybe another podcast on rand cost averaging.
Exactly. That's it. It's called rand cost averaging, the monthly dividend order.
Yeah. and I know I asked someone from Exchange Rate Fund SA about this concept, and she explained it very well. But I think it's something that we need to do because I think I get a lot of questions around, should I just put my 100,000 into the market or should I, you know, put in a little bit more every month type of thing. So I think it's a very important topic to cover as well in the future.
Absolutely. And again, you've got so many debates around it. Many of the fund managers will tell you, or the stats will actually tell you, it depends on how long you're investing for. So if you've got a 20-year period, just stick the 100,000 in. If you're only investing for 5 years, you probably want to phase in. So, you know, there's a lot of, it gets complicated because we have such risk aversion. We don't like losing money, which is understandable. But sometimes in trying not to lose money, we actually go and make some really, really bad decisions.
Then we actually lose out. We lose money.
But I want to end off just with some interesting stats on this, you know, because a lot of people are saying I would have been better off in cash for the last 3 years, so I'm not going into the market, which is true, that they would have been better off. But over time, if you look at the long-term average of the South African stock market versus South African bonds versus cash, South African returns have been 13.8% per annum over the long term. That's the equity market. Bonds have only given you 7.8% and cash 6.9%. And this is against an inflation rate of 6%. So, you know, that's the reality. The reality is if you stay in cash, you're going to barely get more than inflation. Whereas if you actually invest in equities over the long term, you're going to get double, if not more, than the inflation rate.
Yes. And I mean, Maya, it really goes back to all the studies that have been done that equities will always outbid the market. But obviously, it depends on how much time you are spending in the market.
Yeah, and I want to explain why it outperforms. It outperforms because of risk. So any risk you take, you expect a higher return. And if equities cannot deliver the higher, are taking risk, they're going to have to pay a higher return in order for people to invest. It's almost just a simple, if you think about that, whatever risk I'm taking, I have to be compensated for. But understand that risk does mean in the short term, you could actually lose money. But Mapalo, not to be confused with the scams that offer you 30% returns, because those are like risk of losing all your money.
Actually, sometimes you are almost guaranteed to lose all your money.
I guarantee you, if you invest in something that gives you, promises you 30% return per annum or per month, you will lose all your money. That's one guarantee I can give.
All right, Maya. No, I think that's such an important topic because the South African market, we still need so much education around how returns work, how equities work, how investing works. So I think for me, this is just, we are at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this topic. I think there will definitely be more podcasts in the future. Over the years, you know, the compound interest adds up. It's not just, we are so short-sighted that we want to invest today and tomorrow be millionaires.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I must show you an amazing graph of Warren Buffett's wealth. You must see this. It's like he only made his money in the last 10 years. He had to wait till he was 70. He had more than enough money by the time he was 40. But, you know, in terms of the serious wealth, they're like kind of like obscene numbers. It was only at the age of 70 because the compounding came in. And then you start compounding. When you start compounding 1 billion, it becomes 2, and then it becomes 4 billion. Oh, the compounding just goes loopy. And that's when the real money kicked in. So, you know, and I people just don't get that. And it's a graph I actually often show because it's about saying, well, even Warren Buffett had to wait to be the richest man in the world. It wasn't good investment decisions as much as time. So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.